Welcome to Real Stories, a show that has honest conversations from the heart. I invite you to sit back, relax, and allow our guests to speak their truth.
Hello, I'm Taylor, the communication doctor, and welcome to Real Stories. I just want to say, I come from a family where people didn't always speak their truth. And I think it's so important to speak their truth. And every day I meet people who, because of society, are just walking with that facade because they feel that it is the way to be. And in Real Stories, I want people to know the real story behind the facade. And that is why I do what I do. Hello, this is Real Stories, and I am your host, Tally the Communication Doctor. And today on my show, I have Eunisa Kamara, who is a youth advocate. Now, Eunisa, as I look at your name, I'm quite interested because Kamara, for me, is a Western name, and Eunisa sounds to me like a Muslim name. So can you explain that for me?
Well, I grew up in West Africa, Sierra Leone. I was born in a little village called Pepel. Mm. And majority of the people that were there are Muslims. Oh. So Eunisa is a Muslim name. Yeah. And Kamara, if in French, is spelled with a C. But where I'm from is with a K. Yeah. So that's what differentiates the two.
So that's really interesting. So you've got the Muslim name mixed in with the kind of the Western, with the French name, you know, so which is quite interesting. So are you a Muslim then? Are you a Muslim?
I was a Muslim. I've read the Quran. I've dealt with the Jews. I'm quite intrigued. I always like to read. Mm. So I've read the Quran and all the surahs. I've read the Bible. So I've converted to Christianity, but, you know, I still know my surahs. I believe in one God, mm-hmm. you know, one creator. I believe in one being. It's just called different names.
That's quite a big jump, isn't it? From Islam to Christianity, but it's done a lot. I know it's, but it's sometimes done. It's so interesting you being a black man, because from my knowledge, a lot of the time, what I see is a lot of people were Christian, and that's down to colonialism and, you know, Christianity being brought to Africa. So a lot of African and West Indian people are Christians, or they're Muslim if they're like West African or Nigerian and that sort of thing. But what's really interesting is that transition. It normally happens from Christianity into Islam, but you're doing the other way around. So what was your kind of awakening that got you into Christianity? What was the awakening?
You're pushing a lot of buttons, Tanya.
That's what it is. It's real stories.
In America, I was allegedly accused of involving a shootout with police.
Oh, wow.
And I was on the news with the mayor. I was in the news on BBC, CNN, Channel 1, Channel 2, every channel you can think of. Mm. So when I went to jail, a lot happened with the police opening up your cell and other inmates coming there to hurt you at night. So me being a Muslim, I don't want to feel as though they have to protect me, because I don't want to put anyone in harm's way for my behalf.
Yeah.
So I spent a lot of time reading the Bible as to, because I just don't want to go into something without proper understanding. Mm. So I was reading the Quran and reading the Bible, but spending time to self, to understand self, meditating. So I did not want to be associated with the blood, because I knew a lot of people that were in there, friends of mine that were bloods. I did not want to associate with them. I did not want to associate with the Muslims, because I don't want people to figure out that I needed that protection. I'm a man, I'm a grown man, so I should be able to stand on my own. So that is how I still needed to pray. And being that I cannot go and pray with the Muslims at night, and I didn't want to be praying. You know, people see me doing my surah, you know, the surahs where you wash your hands, and you have to call that done, you know. I felt I said, you know what, I need to find some way of me communicating with my creator. So that is the whole essence of me converting to Christianity. So I still know my surahs. I know, even the Jews, I know all their prayers as well. So you have to educate the mind.
Yeah, no, that's a really interesting story. And you know what comes to mind? One of the men I really love is Malcolm X. And I love his journey. And as you said, like you say, with regards to the gun, what happened with you, you know, with the shooting and whatever else. I just thought of Malcolm X because that's where he converted into Islam, isn't it? When he was in prison, reading the Quran, and that's when he had his enlightened time. And it is so interesting how some people, even born again Christians, it's like you hear so many stories that people have to go through that point of crime, or you know what, I'm either going to go this way, I'm going to go to the light side, or I'm going to go to the dark side, or I'm going to go to the light side. And that's like a huge awakening, I feel. Huge. It's huge. It's really, really important. So is that why, leading me on to the youth, you've been a youth advocate, is that one of the reasons why you work with young people?
Well, I've been shot twice.
Wow.
I've been stabbed. My girlfriend was shot in the head. She died in my arms. But when I decided to get away from all that, because I did establish two different businesses in America, I transitioned to the UK. My son, my sister's son, which, you know, we as foreigners, our family's children are our children. I took him to school. I picked him up from school. So when he was killed, I was in the UK.
Wow.
And the pain that I felt, the anger that I felt, I was ready to burn America down. You understand? But I just had to sit down and reflect. By me doing that, is that what he would want me to do? Seeing the pain that my sister, my family was going through, would I want to create that kind of pain onto other family members? So I got the team together and created a psychological program that is going to empower these youths to reflect on their actions. You understand, to know that if you kill somebody, that person's family is losing, but also your family is losing because you're going to jail and your family is not going to be able to embrace you. And your mother that you love so much, or your grandmother who's taking care of you, is going to be worrying about you. So let's put the conscience into play. Let's visualize your actions. What are you to gain? So we did the program and the mayor came. We did a whole big lunch. So that is what brought me into this. I cannot see a youth being sexually, you know, abused, mentally abused. I can't see it. And I cannot see someone who is weak being taken advantage of.
I can't. And is that kind of down to your own experience? And so can I dive a little bit deeper in terms of growing up and ask you about, you know, one of, let's say a positive, I'm going to ask you about positive experience because what you've told me is quite heavy. So to lighten it up, I want you to give me one of your fondest memories as a child growing up.
Be honest with you, Tanya.
Go for it.
I cannot say I can sit here and reflect or recall on growing up having fun, because growing up, my mother's father was a king. My father's father was a king of a little village in Africa. So we had to move from one place to another. And there was a period where the government was trying to assassinate our uncle, us. So it's all in my book coming out, and this is all public domain now if you Google it. So we had to move, and going to school, we did not have friends. You're driven to school, and then by the time school is out, someone is here to pick you up and drive you back to the house. So the only friends you had were the security. Mm. And you deal with them like they're your friends, but there was always a certain extent. So when they moved us, it was at night to relocate us to another country, which was Liberia. Mm. I was given a little freedom. And I felt like, wow, I can have friends. I can walk down the street. But yeah, I can actually say that was my highlight. Yeah, my highlight of my life, because being able to walk down the streets on my own, you know, and having these kids come to my house was the highlight. But when I came to America, transitioned to America, bullying started.
Wow.
Yeah. Kids my color that I was so happy to see, like I can now have friends. You know, I'm feeling safe. My family's here. What can be better than now I'm being bullied? My lunch money was taken. I was being called every kind of name you can think of. I was being told go back to Africa, being called jungle, everything you can think of. So it came to a point where I did not want to go to school. So to say I had an enjoyable childhood, I really cannot say I did.
Wow, that's really interesting. And when you said people were saying to you, go back to Africa and go back to the jungle, you said these were Black people?
My color, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, you know, as time went on, you know, I kind of realized that, you know, it was out of ignorance, because when I grew up, I went to school for psychology and I went back, I would talk to them and I would say, so where is home for you? And they would say, down south.
Mm.
Down south? Down south where?
Yeah.
Alabama. Alabama is home? Mm. And if you think that Alabama is home, something is wrong somewhere.
Yeah, what do you mean with regards to like their history in terms of, yeah, exactly. Africa is the motherland, isn't it, really? Africa is the motherland. Gosh, you know what? So I hear of this happening in England. It's so interesting it's happened in the States, because I have heard of this, and I think it was probably around the 70s, because that's where we had a lot of people from West Africa moving to England. And I know that there was a real issue with regards to West Indians and Africans. My parents are West Indian. And it's really interesting when I look at it, I thought to myself, why is this? You know, I do feel that this generation is different, because I kind of love the Ghanaian and the Nigerian and the culture. And I feel that a lot of young people now are mixing, they see you as black, but there was a time where there was a real divide. And it's so silly, you know, how you can be, you see your brothers and sisters as black people, but yet you're saying go back to Africa, but Africa, traditionally, that's where you're from too. It's madness. But how did you get past that? Because you didn't want to go to school. So, I'm going to ask you a question. I'm going to phrase the question differently. When did you find your light?
Huh. Be honest with you. I found my light in actuality when I carried my girl at the time with the bullet in her head. And because when she was shot, I literally had to, I drove us. I was shot on my neck and she was shot in her head. I drove us to the hospital. I'm speeding up Georgia Avenue in Washington, D.C. and the cops passed me by. I drove to the hospital. I went to, you guys call it A&E, we call it emergency room.
Mm-hmm.
So I pulled up, I went out the vehicle, went in there, I was screaming, help, help. Security was telling me, move your car. I'm full of blood. I'm telling you to help me. So when I came to the realization, they told me she was dead. That's when I actually like, is this the life?
Wow.
Is this what I'm supposed to be going through? Why am I going through this? Why is this? And that turned a lot of, like, you can go to school, you understand? You can have all the book knowledge you need, but are you really aware?
Mm.
You understand? Sometimes we're so educated book-wise, but really dumb. I don't know if you can understand it.
Oh gosh, no, totally. In terms of you, there's book smart, isn't there? Some people, they say if they're book smart, but you know, if you haven't had the experience, it's like you may be book smart, but not experience smart.
Yes, precisely.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so that's where my awakening, my enlightenment came from.
Mm.
Died because of me,
yeah.
My actions, you understand?
So I just have to breathe that through when you said, because I don't feel that you can't blame yourself.
Do have to blame me. Mm. You know, the way we can be able to move forward in life is for us to know, you know, for us to accept our wrong, for us to be aware of our actions. If I was not involved in what I was involved in, she should have never been gone. She would still be here. But due to my ignorance, my greed, she had to pay the price.
You know what? That is such a weight to carry, Unisna. It's that's such a, because I understand where you're coming from when you say that was the circles that you were surrounding yourself with. And that's the impact of what happened. And I'm so sorry about your girlfriend losing her life, that's horrible. But I feel to blame yourself is a weight, it's a heavy weight that you're carrying. And you know, in terms of letting go, because in some ways you can't, you know, I understand, yes, there's a responsibility there, which I think is honourable, but you can't blame yourself on that deep, deep level. It's a lot to carry, isn't it? From an energetic perspective, that's what I mean.
Right, you know, by me acknowledging what I've done, because like I said, if I had not taken her, or I was not involved in what I was involved in, mm-hmm. she'll still be here. But also, this is what gives me the energy to become a motivational speaker, go to these colleges, you know, and go to different communities. And I was talking to Tony, who's part of the Humans First. Mm-hmm. And one thing she said is, your slogan should be, I'm not afraid. I can go anywhere. And which it is a fact. I'm not afraid to go anywhere. I feel as though every community we go into, if you respect someone, they'll respect you. And the message that I have to convey onto others, it's of my experience, is for me to let you know what I've gone through, for you to see the possibilities, for you to be a drug dealer, whatever it is, you are an entrepreneur. But you just have to look at it from another angle. And what I can offer you is that I've dealt with so many people here in the UK, and I don't charge them.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? Because some people will say, well, I don't have the money to pay you. It's okay. You and I can still work together, but the way you can pay me is me giving you my service, my time. I need you to bring yourself back to my surrounding and offer your time and your service to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of the day, Tony, it's not always about money, as I've indicated.
I agree. It's not always about money. And especially when you're able to identify who you're helping as well. Because obviously if it's a corporate company, obviously, you know, you need to get paid. But if it's someone who's in dire straits, that's a difference. So it's more, I think it's more about assessing the situation. But you said something very interesting with regards to your motivational speaking. And I'm a speaker too. And one thing I found myself is, as an actor before I was a speaker, as an actor, a dancer, a performer, mm-hmm. you know, I'd step into a character and be able to tell a story. And that was a storytelling. But the first time I told a story about myself, I could not believe the psychological impact in a positive way that it had on me in terms of lifting a weight off my shoulder. And I suppose after you telling me the story of your partner and your surroundings, everything you were involved in, it must feel like a weight has lifted you off your shoulder. So when you're doing the motivational speaking, do you feel it's almost also a healing space for you? Because when you speak your truth, it's not until you finish speaking your truth, in my experience, that you feel, wow, it's like lifted. What's it feel like for you?
You ever heard the saying, you cannot wash your hand with one hand washes the other? You understand? You have to use both hands to make sure you do the proper washing. You understand? And the way, just like you said, as a speaker, we're by us helping others, we're helping ourselves. You understand? And by us being able to support, we're not giving a lot of sympathy, but we're giving a lot of empathy.
Yes.
You understand? And with that passion, it enables us to grow. You understand? It's able to give us the light that we need. Whenever I was talking, I did a talk at Emmett Smith College, and that's when I got the phone call that my son was just shot.
Wow.
Imagine you're about to go on stage, and you get a phone call, you need to say, you know, Alpha was just shot, and he's dead. Now, with all this anger, this pain, everything that is going through you, how are you going to tell this youth something positive? So sometimes we just have to take a deep breath. And I'm not even going to lie to tell you I went on stage, because no, I just walked away. I just don't know.
That makes sense. Makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know where I was going. Yeah. All I know, I just needed to get out of there. I'm trying to pull the plug off. Tears are coming down. People asking me, what's going on? You all right? I'm looking for the mic. Literally, I'm holding the mic in my hand and I'm still trying to pull it off my pants. You're holding them. Because it's, the battery pack that goes on your pants. And you have the mic that is plugged on your shirt.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking for the battery pack. I'm holding in my hand. I'm still trying to take it off.
Yeah, because your mind's not right, because you normally got that attached to your you call it pants, your trousers. You have that attached.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's right. When you're doing your work. Yeah. Oh wow, that's how old was your son when that happened?
He was 24. He was having a birthday party.
Yeah.
For his girlfriend, a birthday party.
Mm.
These guys came and wanted to get in.
Yeah.
And security said, no, it's invite only. But my son just happened to be walking by, and security said, oh, these guys want to come in. He said, okay. He stopped and said, well, do you guys have an invite?
Yeah.
And they said, no. So he's like, no, you can't. They waited for him outside till the party was over. And his birthday was in the same month, just a couple of days. So my sister, the family refused to bury him till his birthday.
Oh, so he did. So he died from that. Oh, that's why it was going to be my next question, because sometimes you got shot, but he actually died from that as well. God, I'm so sorry. Wow. It's a lot to go through. Wow. You have been through a lot in your life, haven't you? Definitely. This is definitely a real story, isn't it? It's very deep in terms of what you've had to experience. So how do you keep going? Having gone through everything you've gone through, having had the challenges that you've had, what keeps you sane?
In the hopes of bringing a change to somebody else's life. You understand? I've invested in so many different companies. I've invested in so many charities. I give so much money. Barkey would tell you sometimes she and I on the phone when on the other guy, like, I want to give £3,000 to that charity. And then as soon as you get off the phone, you have another call. Barkey's like, stop. You're giving all this money away. Do you have money to eat tomorrow? I'm like, I don't know, but yeah, I'm giving away. Yeah.
Oh, wow. But, you got the logic has got to kick in sometimes.
But that's what keeps me going, trying to make a difference in somebody else's life. And Tanya, they say, when you give, God will bless you.
Yes.
And there are days where, you know, people come in and say, oh, Mr. Kamau, remember we, you know, we just want to confirm your bank details. Are they still the same? And I'm like, who's this? Oh, this is so-and-so company. You did a talk for us like a few months back. Mm. I'm like, oh yeah, okay, my account detail is.
So it's karma, it comes back to you.
Say, what
you
yeah, so I think, yeah, when we do good, it comes back.
Yeah. No, I do believe that as well, you know, and I suppose it's all, sometimes you've got to be thinking about it, but gosh, so that's where you kind of, that's how you keep going, by telling your story and by healing from your story as well, and by pushing and supporting others. So I'm going to bring it to a close now, but before I bring it to a close, who, you know, if you've experienced, all the challenges you've experienced, who in life inspires you?
My father, may his soul rest in peace.
Mm.
My father used to always say, as soon as you focus in school, I will support you. Never seen my father sick. Never seen him call out of work.
Mm.
And one day I said, Dad, you make a lot of money. I want to be like you. I want to make the money you make.
Yeah.
I want to be rich.
Mm.
He looked at me and he laughed. He said, you can make all the money you want in this world, but without honor, you understand, without self-awareness, you will never be of any good. You have to be a pillar to people for you to gain the wealth you want. And you don't need financial wealth.
Mm-hmm.
That, those words I'll never forget. And that is something that I've always looked up to. And he's my hero.
Oh, you know, that's...
I've never said this to no one.
No, I love that. Thank you for sharing it with me. I actually, as you said that, I thought of Bob Marley, because Bob Marley was asked a similar question about wealth.
Mm.
And he said, wealth is your family. Wealth is your blessings. You know what I mean? It's not necessarily financial things, but that's where your real wealth is. And it's like what your father, it's like what your father says, you know, it's what you're giving out to other people. It's, you know, the way you are, the way you carry yourself. That's so powerful. What powerful words that your father gave you. What a gift in those Indeed. Words that he gave you. That's a gift, isn't it? On a deep level.
It is.
Beautiful. Yeah. And how long ago did your father pass?
About 3 years ago now.
Yeah.
And my son died 2 years ago. Yeah. No, a year and a half now. Yeah.
Yeah. God.
So he's like, I'm just losing family after the next. I'm going out my mind in the UK.
Yeah, no, I get it. I hear you. And it's interesting you said three. I think it's coming up to 4 years that my father passed, actually. So we've got that.
So how are you coping?
You know what? I kind of feel like he's always here. For me, he's around. I feel like, I don't know what your belief system, you said you as a Christian might be different, but I kind of feel like he's maybe not here physically, but I feel like he's around me. Yeah, yeah. So I talk to him when I meditate.
Okay.
I communicate, may think I'm crazy. And my mum as well, mum's passed too. I talk to her too, I talk to them.
Also. I'm sorry to hear that as well.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's another level when you lose, you know, when you lose your son as well, that's another level, you know, not experience that. But grief is a very hard thing. I feel different people deal with it differently.
Absolutely right.
And and then sometimes it does, I do feel in a positive sense, it can push you on to do the things that you need to do, because there's an appreciation for life. There can be, anyway, for some people. But for me, I found that more of an appreciation for life. So don't hold back. If I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it. If I'm going to say something, I'm going to say something. And I speak my truth. And hopefully I can leave a legacy. Like you're leaving a legacy now with your book and with what you're doing. So
I got to Tanya, I also believe that, you know, with everything that we go through, that's how we find our purpose. You understand? That gives us, you know, the power, the will, the strength to keep striving on. And as long as you're able to be honest with yourself, people will see that light in within you.
Yeah.
Because there's so many people going through the pain. You understand? I'm dealing with a young lady that lost her son. You know, he was stabbed here in London. And the first time I met her, you know, she was literally isolating herself.
Gosh. Yeah.
And talking to her, letting her understand what I've been through. Now we're the best of friends. She'll call me in the middle of the night. And he's like, can I sleep? I just need someone to talk to. That's fine. You understand? We can have that talk. I'm always here for you. And when you can make someone believe that you're there for them and they can feel that sincerity, you will have a friend for life.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And you know what? This podcast has been really nice because it just feels like I've been having a conversation with you and I'm just recording it, I suppose, now. And it feels actually I have to bring it to a close. But it's been really nice to talk to you. Thank you for being so honest and so authentic. And there's a real humbleness to you. So thank you so much for coming on my show. So I'm going to say from Tanya Communication Doctor and Eunice Kamara, adios. One of my takeaways from this show is that Eunice has so much inner strength. He's been able to withstand so much going through the awakening that he went through as a Christian and then having to go through so much grief with his father and his son and still standing strong, still coming through it, still hitting back. It's almost like he's been knocked down but he's got up, and there is such empathy. And he's been in service to other people, to help other people, and to do the motivational speaking that he's doing to support other people that may be going through similar things or maybe inspire others. So I just want to say that's just amazing and just so, so resilient and so strong and so forward-thinking as well. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening. If you would like to learn more, please visit our website at communicationdoctor.co.uk. And to listen to more real stories, don't forget to subscribe.